call this meeting to order. Citizens' comments. I don't see any citizens, so we can skip over that, right? Approval of the minutes from the November 21st meeting of this council. I apologize, we just sent them out very late this morning. Those were audio minutes that were on the website. Do we have any discussion on the minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion passed.
I was very excited. Even my Mueller joke was on there. It was nice.
Our WLIP compliance status. I just want to run through with the council today the where we are on compliance. And the good news is we're right on track with compliance. So earlier this year in March, we submitted a large amount of data to the Department of Administration for the V4 parcel project. And that included mapping data, as well as tax assessment data that was linked to it. We got preliminary feedback back from DOA that it looks pretty good. There was a few smaller items that still had to be worked on. Welcome, Andy.
Hello.
A little bit of feedback, a couple other items we had to touch back with DOA on, and that was completed. So we're good on the V4 parcel data, and that is a necessary function for us to be eligible for any grant funds moving into the future, so every year. Our 2018 grant agreement, that is for the Esri parcel fabric project, which we will talk about in a little more detail a little later in this meeting. That grant agreement was fully inserted into the budget in March, and the agreement was signed, sent off to DOA, and we're good with that grant agreement at this time. We have something called our expenditure activity report that's currently in progress. We have to submit that every June, and it just details all of our activities that we've undertaken for land information project activities. That I have filled out preliminarily. I have forwarded it to our finance department, and they will insert dollar amounts to each of those figures. And what we have to do is show that we've spent at least a certain threshold of monies based upon the deed recordings throughout the year. And there won't be any problem in getting that in by the end of June at all.
How much money did you give us this last year? Ms. Joellen, lots of money?
Yeah, lots of money, very well.
The update to our land information plan, this is something that the DOA was previously calling our land records modernization plan, and they're changing the terminology on it. It's now going to be referred to as our land information plan. That is, we're just kicking that off with our internal CALM committee, and that CALM committee consists of myself, Mike, Terry, Joellen, Andy, as well as Mary Kubicki. And the CALM committee will begin the redraft of that plan. That plan is now due every 3 years, and we'll talk about that in a bit more detail later in this meeting also. And then our 2019 grant application, we cannot start yet. It won't be out until October 1st. But when it does, we have roughly 3 months to get it in by the end of the year. And so I don't anticipate any issues there either. So in a nutshell, our compliance is, we're right on track for compliance with the program at this point. Are there any questions related to those items? No? Okay. We will move on to the vertical mapping datum conversion. This is related to our 2017 WLIP grant. And as that project is being spearheaded by Rob, we will let him give an update to the committee.
Okay. It's, just so you know, it's NGVD 29 to NAVD 88.
We're already through the horizontal.
Yes, we are. Exactly. So we're horizontal, that's complete and been migrated to where there's dual coordinates now for each section corner throughout Kenosha County. Currently, through the vertical datum conversion, we're in the process of leveling the Wisconsin height modernization benchmarks throughout the region. This is a region-wide conversion process because of the vertical, the sensitivity of the vertical and the how the monuments are positioned. We wanted to approach this more as a vertical, a region-wide approach.
What's our region?
The seven counties.
Okay. I wasn't sure if by region you were extending that further.
Exactly. No, just within the sewer pack area region. With the way that the height modernization benchmarks are established throughout. There's runs that run down, say, the 94 corridor. There's some that go into the city, but there might not be anything until Walworth County. So we need to have a balance to properly model the relationship between 29 and 88. So what we're currently in the progress right now with leveling and determining those vertical differences between 88 and 29. It's an ongoing project, so this isn't something that just it will be throughout the year that we'll be establishing these. And the goal at this point where we're at currently is to have everything completed by the end of this year, to have the region vertically move or have dual elevations at the end of this, at the end of the year in December of 2018, the way things are progressing. So if you want me to get more technical, I can, but
you might lose us, I think.
But that's where we're at. Thanks.
What would be the next steps just after that, once that's completed?
After that, then both horizontal and vertical, we would have a database that will contain two sets of coordinates, northern easting elevation, with the, and it will also have a vertical difference between. So if you had, if there were an elevation already somewhere else, you could apply this shift in that local area to relate to NAVD 88 or have those elevations relate that would be from the legacy relating to now NAVD 88.
What's the use for that?
A lot of it is more for FEMA compliancy and things of that sort. The biggest emphasis is moving from, because of the federal requirements, the legacy elevations and positioning were inconsistent with a lot of the federal programs. And that's really been the kind of the impetus for why this change is occurring. The biggest issue was because we had to come up with a more cost-effective manner. The original was reobserving every single corner and doing everything from anew. And that became cost prohibitive. So there was some techniques and abilities to be able to manage this data set in a more, you know, cost effective manner to relate it to the new federal programs or federal datums.
So like when we have an emergency like a tornado or a flood, then FEMA uses a different set of data to match up to ours? Or?
I wouldn't say that they use a different set of data set. It's just
different
when you...
language?
It's not a different... GPS is when one would go out and collect data, that's usually your biggest rationale is with GPS, GPS is natively related to NAD 83.
Okay.
So one can go out, immediately start collecting points, and immediately be able to be referenced to, you know, relating to the GPS measurements.
Okay.
So having now the data sets supporting and relating to NAD 83 will expedite those collection procedures with that. So that's that really, I think that that'll be the biggest driver is the speed of having, you know, to collect information without having to apply a transformation, you know, to convert the data that right. was collected in the field to the base mapping data sets.
So Scott, does that mean that the topo maps will be adjusted then?
The topo maps be adjusted.
Okay. You want me to explain?
Yes.
Okay.
Please do.
Sure. So what's going on is as part of the conversion process, when you say topo maps, are you talking about contour elevations mm-hmm. or contour? So contours will not. The contours, the vertical relationship between 29 and 88 is roughly about, say, 2/10 of a foot. I'm just going to speak in more generalities. It's dynamic. So instead of Kenosha could be 0.15 feet, the western side could be 0.25 feet. So overall, we're just saying about 2/10 of a foot. If you draw a contour line, a contour line in a digital terrain, a DTM data set, when you draw a contour line at an elevation, on that even contour even elevation, it might be going around here. But if now I raise it up 2/10 of a foot, that data now slides in because it's been raised. It slides in. It's slightly shifted. So in flat elevations, that sliding you would see, you know, moving in, it would have to be regenerated. All the contours, because of the change in elevation, where the thought was the DTM data is getting shifted, so it's moving up and has an 88 elevation, but the contour lines will just remain referenced as NGVD 29. But for the future, anything subsequently newly collected would have new elevations or new contours that would reflect the 88 datum.
Which datum will the 2017 LIDAR data be referenced to?
That will be 88.
88, so. That data is due, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes also. That data will be collected a little later this year, and then we will regenerate the contours at that time.
Right. But anything previously will just be referenced. The contours will be referenced to 29.
Okay.
Any more discussion on the vertical datum conversion?
I think I just learned more about that than I ever knew.
Okay, thank you, Rob. For our 2018 WLIP grant, as you'll recall, at our November meeting, we had approved a project to utilize the $50,000 in grant funding for the Esri parcel fabric conversion project. That project is going to take our existing mapping data sets and place them in the Esri parcel fabric. The parcel fabric is a relatable relationship between different data layers within that all those data sets. So when we move a monument, if there's a parcel line that's connected to it, it will move that parcel line with it and so forth, as well as many other mapping features. After we approved that in November, we started putting together an RFP that went out this past spring, and just about 6 weeks ago, we chose a contractor, and I'm happy to report that the RFP review team selected a very good contractor, and that was Panda Consulting out of Florida. And they're one of the best in the business at implementing the parcel fabric at the county level. So where we are right now is we are just finalizing the contract. It's just about ready to be signed. We've been doing a little bit of back and forth on some very minor issues, and it's just about ready to go. The RFP came in for Panda at just slightly under the $50,000.
Yay!
It came out at $48,100. So we were very happy with that we came in underneath. So, and there's a little wiggle room in case there were a change order in there or something. So we're very excited to get that project underway. I anticipate that by July 1st, we will probably be starting that project. And I hope that we could wrap it up by either October 1st or maybe October 31st, based on some conversations we've had with the vendor there. So this is something that a lot of other counties have tried to undertake themselves in-house, and it's taken a rather long time, between 1 and 2 years to do it. As I had reported back in November, it just seemed to make sense to go to an outside vendor and not get bogged down in doing something that a lot of other counties are struggling with. So, and we're seeing more and more of that out there. The longer time goes on, more counties are choosing to work with the vendor because it's just a much faster process. Are there any additional questions on the Esri Parcel Fabric project? This year only. When it's done, it's done.
We're good.
We're good. So this will not trickle. The only way it would trickle into 2019 is if the vendor didn't finish it and it just bled into 2019 a little bit. It won't require any additional grant funds into future years. So without any further questions, we'll move on to the 2020 orthophotography program.
Gosh, it just seems like we did the last one. They come around
It does, but when you're using the data, it seems like it's been so long at the same time.
You're looking at it.
Yeah, when you're looking at it. So, Rob will help me out as I talk through this project here. Rob is spearheading this effort for the entire region. So he's our subject matter expert. I will let you know that this is a coordinated effort for the entire region, all seven counties. The approximate project cost for Kenosha County in the past, in 2015, were roughly $153,000. Now, you got to remember, we're somewhat unique compared to other counties because we not only get the orthophotography, which is the straight down photography, we get the oblique photography, which is down at a 45 degree angle.
Which horse, like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Currently, it is ourselves and Milwaukee County in the region use this product. And we have one other county that is just beginning to express interest in doing so for 2020. And whether or not that comes to fruition, we don't know, but that's Walworth County at this point. They're going to be looking.
You'd think with all this Foxconn stuff for a scene, we'd think about it, but.
You would think.
No.
Tentatively, Rob is bringing some grant funding to the table, and he's telling us that it looks like we'll probably have $20,000 that will be applied towards the county.
I should say, I mean, would be about, and actually there might be even more. I mean, realistically, I know that there's been some discussion points about even trying to bring in utilities, as partnerships to help to offset some of the expenditures as needed. As long as that information is being jointly shared, that they might be more willing to also participate in assistance.
Seems like something they could use, especially.
Well, that's exactly.
Especially with the oblique stuff, I think that would be useful to someone too, or no?
A lot of it is more just the various interests for NAIDR.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything necessarily that pro con, for oblique, but I know there's just. A lot of it is just more because of the 3-inch. The 3-inch because of the fact that when you go from a 12-inch down to a 6-inch, now down to a 3-inch, that the 3-inch is really kind of a game changer because of utilities. You can see so much more of the level of detail. That is more the critical component that brings on a lot of interested partners, for having that aspect, both from a transportation to a utility perspective.
So like We Energies, is that what you're talking about?
Correct.
We budget in the capital improvement program $160,000 for this in 2020 as well as 2022. So any funding that Rob brings to the table for us on our behalf is very welcome, and it lowers our bottom line in terms of what we have to ask for out of the CIP. So, additionally, there are some impervious and non-impervious mapping options available through that program. I'll let Rob talk about that a little bit in more detail.
As far as the impervious, non-impervious, I don't know if familiar with it, more it's delineating those specific features, sidewalks, roads, buildings, structures, and as far as that would prevent rain, or water from seeping in. So if you had stormwater management aspects or interest, that looking at cadastral as it relates to a parcel, that might be something for consideration. The other aspects are shoreline mapping, delineations that understand the percentages as it relates to a specific parcel, to what type of impervious or non-impervious surface that would be or at that given site. So that would allow maybe how things are zoned to permit, building, or what type of buildable area would be allowed in on that given parcel of land. The impervious, non-impervious mapping options would now have collectively a data set or a data set around a specific designated area, more analysis or having quantitatively being able to determine, what type of requirements would be necessary to permit.
So Scott, do you think this would be something that because we've had this conversation about stormwater in the past and how they bill it out the municipalities for stormwater charges, is this something that could be levied by local municipalities to have more accurate billing? Because that's always been one of the things that I've found problematic with the way they bill out stormwater, is it's kind of a guess. It's like you got this much frontage on a road, even if you have nothing built on it, pretty much your bill is going to be X dollars. And I think I doubt the formula. I'm wondering if that's something that could be used to come up with more accurate calculations for that. Because they're supposed to take into account impervious and surfaces versus things that can absorb runoff. And I don't think they are, because I don't think they can really with the technology that they have currently. So do you think that's something that could be useful for that or no?
I believe this data would be useful for that if they so chose to bill in that fashion, rather than just based on a linear footage
across the
frontage of their property. Andy, can you speak to what mapping we have as far as impervious and non-impervious throughout the county? If I recall correctly, do we have some?
I'm like, I've never
lakes?
Heard of any.
Well, we have that from Sewer Pack, just around the lakes.
Just around the lakes.
Right.
Okay.
They did an analysis from the 10 biggest lakes, I think it was.
Okay. From your standpoint, do you see a need elsewhere?
Yeah, we didn't get to talk. I didn't see it, but I want to talk a little bit more. We can do so afterwards.
Okay.
Because, what you're saying, Terry, is I think the communities could use that. Then they would have to go back and redo it all.
Yeah.
I don't see them doing that.
But as things change so much, with runoff for planning purposes. For example, for you, I could see it being useful if you're going to have something that was open for years and years and years, and now it's going to be one giant warehouse. That's obviously going to change.
Yeah, a lot of their stormwater utilities are just based upon land, how much it is.
Just how many acres. That's what we get. Yeah, yep.
They don't care what kind it is, and that's why we're getting billed for wetlands and floodplains.
But technically, statutorily, they're supposed to care.
Correct. They took the easy way.
Yeah, yeah.
They took the easy way.
So I'm just saying, if we have a tool that we could offer them to get them to, without an excessive amount of people work, to a better number,
it there's might benefit a cost with
both
that.
Us and yes. them, or no?
There's an additional
there's
cost.
There's a cost. Okay.
Yeah.
There is a cost, and we have those in hand. Rob has delivered those to all the counties. In fact, I can pull it up here, Rob, if we have to. Rob has classified areas throughout the county as urban versus
it's a hefty cost.
Yes, it's a hefty cost.
That's a different ball game.
Yeah, it is.
If it's a small cost, I could see that. That's a hefty cost.
Yes.
You'd have to need that for planning, I think.
Well, that's a lot of detail.
Yeah.
It is a lot of detail. I mean, you're capturing, I mean, a significant amount of it would be almost like a consideration of almost like a planimetric capture that now is quantified now by polygons of what of the areas of each of these various classifications. So sidewalks would be one classification, roads would be another classification, buildings would be things that would determine as being impervious. You know, the good news is everything else aside from that would be, you know, it would be pervious. So you would that the grass wouldn't be collected, but you would know, you know, based on what has not been filled in, so to speak.
Is anyone shown interest in wanting this?
Within Kenosha County?
Anywhere.
Not yet.
It's pricey. I'm not even going to lie. That's a lot of money.
This originated from Washington County, and I thought it would be something to at least throw it out to the rest of the counties as we're planning, you know, if there would be interest.
What from Washington County prompted them to look into this, do you know?
I think a lot of it was with the around the lakes.
Okay, and that would make sense, but we just did that here with sewer back.
Right. I was curious if that was how that was performed or completed. So I was going
to,
I'll
Tom,
look into
yeah,
it
you'd
a
have to
bit.
Talk to Tom.
Exactly.
Right.
So,
do you think it's more likely, Rob, that if there is interest in such a product, it would come at a municipal level versus a county level?
That's where I see it, is more for a municipal level, where for stormwater management. I mean, and understanding that if you wanted to reassess, say, manufacturers or things that were really pushing to the stormwater and taxing that, which you have to then go through and maintain that, that's where I see the greatest benefit.
That's where I would see it.
Is at the municipal level. But
so
that
you
was
read
just,
the statute, it's pretty clear that they're supposed to take all those things through account, but currently they don't have
the tools,
the mechanism.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So they're using what they kind of
they're guessing
can.
It. Yeah.
Exactly. So that was where I see the biggest benefit. And I think that shows and demonstrates in a lot of studies, you know, where this municipalities could see a return on their investment because now they have metrics to define, to defend their you know, what they're assessing, you know, that individual industry.
That said, I will be meeting with the city and Pleasant Prairie, who are the two most likely candidates.
Well, Salem has quite a bit in stormwater that they put out there too, so maybe Salem Lakes might be another option.
I will contact them also, and I'm going to deliver these numbers so that they're aware, because you know, in most counties, these numbers are going to be forwarded and said, if you're interested,
and they're going to be like,
calculate it out for your land area,
yeah,
and let us know. So I can certainly do that.
Yeah.
So.
To be fair, we're the cheapest one out of all counties, so, well, not quite. Ozaki's cheaper.
Almost.
Ozaki's cheaper.
Ozaki's tiny.
Yeah.
Is that hard for them to maintain once they do it, or?
As far as maintaining,
it's gotta be constant, yeah.
I would sit there and say once you establish it, then you would have a maintenance cost on top of it, but it would be, I mean, pale in comparison. You would just want to, I think, every 5 years, identify what's changing and go through
like the new building. So like take
exactly.
an assessment, new building.
Correct. Exactly. All those would. As you have the permits and you have the information, you're going to understand that things are going to subsequently change, and then have it on a, at that point it would be dollars instead of thousands of dollars that in that update. So.
Because is it a charge by square foot? How do they come up with that number? Because it seems to be
the metrics
precise.
Were on a quarter section basis.
Okay.
And is scalable based on urban, rural, or
okay.
Suburban.
Yeah,
I should say urban, suburban, rural.
Yeah.
So is kind of the metrics that we're based on. But obviously, as things would progress, and it's not subject to doing the whole entire county. It's subject to doing just specific parcels. Or in a quarter section of area that would be of interest. And that numbers are just budget, kind of just ROMs. I mean, they're not specific that number is gonna be exact.
Exactly that.
Right.
Okay, so just to let you know that impervious, non-impervious mapping is an available option. We can talk to the municipalities about it. We can think about it ourselves internally. And there's plenty of time to do that yet. We're just at the forefront of planning for 2020 at this point. The last thing is, I've held some conversations with Joint Services on the use of the Eagle View or pictometry product over there, and they're very happy with that product over in Joint Services, and those oblique photos are a big part of that. It's very tightly integrated into their system.
Has it been useful? I know when we did the demo, you guys were geeked about it back then, but...
Yes. Sorry.
That's okay.
Caught me between a yawn. Not because of this. Right after lunch, I had turkey.
There it is. I'll use that one too. Next
turkey. I had turkey for lunch. A big sandwich.
But I really did.
I like that.
So you guys have been
happy
with it?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So, you know, I would anticipate there would be a lot of support to stick with the same vendor for 2020 because they offer the oblique. If we were to go away from them, a lot of other vendors don't have an oblique product, and that would really hurt us. I think we'd be going.
So back. We're going to make that a requirement for our.
I wouldn't be surprised to see
our,
it.
That kind of should be our standard requirement now, because I mean that's what we've wanted and we like it.
Correct.
We have good uses.
No point talking to somebody who can't deliver.
I mean, especially since we're trying to go from 5 to like a 3.2.
Yeah, we should
correct.
Be straight
right.
out that if we're not going to accept anybody who doesn't do obliques, we shouldn't even put it out there. Why let the other people waste their time doing a bid on something we're going to say no to anyway?
Well, the thing is, but from the sewer picks thing, I mean, there's other communities that don't care about obliques.
Nice. Yeah, it's correct. I mean, the obliques are, as a planning tool, is not necessarily required, so we want the nadir imagery, but from the county's levels, I certainly can understand the oblique requirement in nature. So, but as we're looking at it, we're facilitating and providing information to the counties and saying, well, our main concern is nadir. You know, top down.
So maybe to Terry's point is, could there be a situation where some of the counties are finding pricing better for their regular orthos, but yet they vote on to get that one, and then we're left hanging? Because we can really only go one route. Could that be a, could that happen?
As far as from the commission's role, we will, we know we need imagery. So it's not that we're going to turn away the county. All we're looking at and saying, part of what we, what is required from us, or what was required for us to do our land use inventory and things of that sort, we need data. So we are going to provide and look for, supplementally to support Kenosha County in the NADIR collection. We know what it would, the range of costs would be in you know, as a collect for NADIR. As to your interest in obliques, that's obviously, you know, the direction you want would like to head, because of the, you see the value and the benefit of it. So it's that, that spigot won't get turned off because of that.
Right. I guess I just was wondering if a decision was made to go with one vendor for the region, and that vendor didn't provide obliques, would we thus do our, would we end up picking our vendor, which may be different than the others?
You have.
Okay, so we already did that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, at that point. We're modeling the WROC program, the Wisconsin Regional
Ortho-Photo Consortium.
So that has, that consortium has selected AIRS as the contractor, and AIRS with Quantum Survey is our Quantum Spatial, sorry, should know that. As far as that is who they partnered, you know, as far as for the WROC program, and they have pricing for NADIR image collect. The obliques being, you know, through Eagle View are separate, but we know we need your imagery as, you know, the commission, as far as the role to do the regional planning for the land use. So we're not treating them separately. You'll see it separately as far as
priced,
but you know, they're, but they will be two different products, you know, as far as in services that Kenosha's going separately than what the region has.
Okay,
selected.
I got it.
So both you and Milwaukee. The only thing that would change possibly is if you start to get Racine, it might be better serving to go to the region to maybe look at economy of scale, because now you're approaching
right
a larger, you know, mm-hmm. Geographic footprint that might help offset as it's facilitated under, say, one contract. But that would be something that would have to be considered if, you know, that other counties would start to require that as part of a service. If that makes sense.
Makes sense.
The we don't know if this project in 2020 will require grant funding to be approved by this committee yet or not. It's a potential project, so that's why we wanted to bring you up to date on where we are, were in the early planning phases of the 2020 project. Additionally, as of last year, we also inserted an orthophotography flight into the CIP budget for 2022. So the intention going forward would be, if it's approved by the county board and administration going forward, is we'd fly in 2020, 2022, 2025, and then fly again in 27, and then 30.
So we didn't have as big of a gap.
Correct.
We had talked about that last year, didn't we?
Correct. The 2022 and 2027, they could be adjusted slightly to 2023 and 2028, depending on
what's going on,
what we wanted to do. But that's what we're asking for.
Now, the request went in for 2018, right?
It did.
And was there a reason why that did not get support?
It was denied, and I think part of that, Marty, if I recall correctly, was we did not have it in the CIP budget, and perhaps that didn't bode well for us.
but we're trying to be proactive this time, get it in the CIP, so.
Right, right. So, you know, I think the big thing is, you know, as we discussed with the county executive, it was, one, it was kind of a new idea that we're changing the schedule, looking for funding. I'm not sure that, you know, that was right around the time of Foxconn and some of the uncertainty. Maybe there's going to be a larger footprint change that we should be kind of just holding off a little bit to accommodate that. So my perspective is, you know, as we're, you know, as we're going forward, we need to make sure that we're socializing this with the county executive's office. Here's our plan, here's our schedule in advance, and kind of give him, you know, forewarning to think about it. And then, you know, as he has questions about it, he can talk to various individuals and say, hey, what do you see for change? What are you thinking? You know, would this add value? And certainly, you know, we've seen tremendous change within the county in the last 10 years. So we expect that just to continue on. So, you know, it's, I think that's, you know, kind of my perspective on why it was declined, plus what we need to do going forward to make sure that he's more in the loop in advance, and I think that will help.
All right, good.
Okay. Any more discussion on the 2020 orthophotography program?
Moving on.
Okay. The land information plan update. The land information plan, as you'll recall, is something that had previously been required of us once every 5 years. It has to be approved by this committee, and it was last done so probably in November of 2014. The state DOA, as part of the Wisconsin Land Information Program, has now changed that plan from being a once every 5 year update to a once every 3 year update. So we need to have that plan redrafted and approved by this committee at our next fall meeting. We're required to submit a first draft to DOA by October 1st. That first draft will be checked just for formatting, not for content necessarily, okay? So it's a very light review of the plan. Then we will have to submit the final plan to the DOA by December 28th. Our internal comm committee is beginning this process. We have our first kickoff meeting scheduled for the third week of June, I believe. And this is something we've been doing since the year 2000 at least. So we will meet, we will probably get together 3-4 times, talk about the update of that plan. And what's important about that plan is any projects we would like to utilize grant monies from this WLIP program towards has to be inserted into that plan. Now, if we forget to put something in the plan, it's not terribly difficult to make an amendment. The state is very willing to work with counties to do that. But at the same time, it'd be nice as we go through this update that we just have give some very thorough thought to what we would like to see in that plan for the next 5 years, or next 3 years, excuse me. So in November, we will meet and hopefully approve that plan at that time, get it submitted to the state by December 31st, and we should be good until probably
in 2021.
Yeah, 2021. Yep, in the summer, and we'll do it all over again.
Good times.
Put it on your calendar too.
Oh yeah.
2021.
Put a tickler. 2021. Do that silly plan again.
So, any other discussion regarding the land information plan?
Nope.
Let's move on to the LIDAR project update. Our 2017 LIDAR project. not a project that is funded through this committee, but I wanted to bring you all up to speed on where we were. We are part of a consortium, as you'll recall, of the four Northeast Illinois counties, as well as Racine County and ourselves. We jumped onto this project rather late because Lake County agreed to pay for 40% of Kenosha County data, and it just made sense.
How can we say no to that kind of a deal, right?
It was a wonderful thing. That data was collected in the spring of 2017, and it was using a new technology termed Geiger mode LIDAR. And Rob, do you want to give us a real brief a description of Geiger mode versus traditional LIDAR?
Okay, traditional LIDAR is a very fast laser that spits out a pulse of light.
Measure stuff.
To measure stuff and gets a return, you know, back. And,
got it.
And it's like a flashlight. It measures as it light passes through.
One of those cool levels that does that?
It's a little bit more than that, but it's one of those. But it does send out pulses of light and gives elevation or ranges back, and that turns into a height on the ground. Whereas a photon sensing Geiger mode LIDAR is what it goes through is this basically a cell, and instead of sending out one singular pulse of light, it goes and sends out millions of pulses. It goes through this and sends out millions of pulses of light in this chip, and then it comes back with a bunch of elevations, you know, from that area. So the benefit you have is you can fly higher and still get a very dense ground point sampling on the ground to, when I say point sampling, density of points. So instead of a point on a linear flown at 5,000 feet, you might have a point every, say, 2 feet. And you know, that would have a collected elevation. Whereas a Geiger mode, you can fly three times higher and have a point every half foot. So it's that much of a kind of a game changer in that sense with the technology. But with that new technology, you have some setbacks, you know, in how data is sensed and how the data was being registered, you know, to the ground data. You know, it's not that it's, you know, this is something that is not something that is, you know, the end result will be bad. It'd actually be good. It's just some of the processing, editing efforts are a little bit more intense than the editing that was of the traditional sensors. So it's having to work through some of those logistics to get the data that will be one of the more dense data sets in, you know, as far as collected through the USGS program, you know, that ever at the, you know, for the area in the Northeast Illinois and the, you know, Wisconsin or Racine and Kenosha counties, so in Wisconsin. So I'm looking forward to the results of it. I've worked with LIDAR data for 20 years, and I've never seen, you know, a level of through the pilots programs, I've never seen a data set so dense and also smooth, you know, as far as it, usually you get a lot of noise when you start getting into the higher repetition rates, and it's actually demonstrating very good repeatability on point-on-point, you know, surfaces. So it's probably too much I went into. Sorry.
I think that was very good. Thank you, Rob. That said, the deliverables have been delayed, and now we are scheduled to get them at the end of July. Okay, they were previously due in April.
April,
right.
April. Okay, and we came out kind of good on that schedule. Racine County is looking at the end of October, unfortunately.
Ooh, yes.
And that's critical because that data is going to be used by you guys to do the pike.
Yes, I know.
He's like, I realize that. Thank you.
So that timing is all very critical.
Yes, And I've been on a week, now we're on a week updates. And correct, we know that there's a lot of projects that are
dependent
on that data, and to use that data as far as for that for analysis like that. So I know the Pike River, and then I also there was the Fox too.
Oh, so DNR?
Not the DNR. I think there was some interest with going with it starts from Tishigan Lake going south, that they were looking at, you know, that data set, and they're looking for change, looking for both sedimentary and change, you know, as far as water course, as far as how it's what has happened over the since the 2011 or 2010 LIDAR data, so that was collected. So there's a lot of dependency.
Is that the frequency every 7 years for LIDAR?
The reason why, I would say every 10 years. And the only reason why was the great deal to be able to jump on board and have Lake County pay 40% of the collect. So that's kind of the reason why I think they jumped on. Racine jumped on also because they didn't want to be the last county, that the oldest data set. Correct. Around, but I would say about every 10 years would be a kind of a more milestone to have.
Or whenever Lake County wants to do it again.
Or they want to pay
exactly
out.
Correct.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They got that much money, bring it up.
Okay, thanks.
And as I recall, correct me if I'm mistaken, isn't the state recommending every 8 years?
The state recommends every 8 years. I guess I was looking at it more as right. Just to keep in keeping with, say, milestones with our traditional, you know, flying structures, as kind of a good reminder to get elevation data.
And this is something Andy and I have spoken about in the past also. We came up with 10 years also.
Okay.
We're right on board with that. I just wanted to let you know that the state has recommended every 8 years, and therefore...
Does anybody do it every 8 years? The state recommends a lot. It's kind of like how the state says everybody should have their assessing done by May 1st, and nobody ever has their assessing done by May 1st.
It's so new, though, that I don't know if anyone's had the opportunity. Yeah.
I don't.
Do they have?
I would sit there and say, looking, if you were going to go with all the counties in Wisconsin, I would say only maybe one or two would have maybe that 8 year mile benchmark being. I think Brown County, if memory serves me, they might have done it. As far as, but I think that, I don't even think Dane has had that.
And they have so much growth there.
Correct. And I don't know if they were even on an 8 year cycle. I know they have LIDAR data, but I don't think it's this.
Well, and part of our approach, just so everyone kind of knew, is that we thought that we might fly specific zones of change in when we thought we would need to do it, like we would fly down I-94
right.
And pick out some other areas, because you can do that.
Right. Yeah, you can, absolutely. The other thing that I was going to mention was the only exception might be for consideration of the bluff, where you might need more a greater frequency because of the circumstances, that there might be more of an engineering consideration for that. But overall, topology generally is somewhat stagnant, you know, as far as, but there could be areas where you would have an interest because there's a large development occurring. So, and that's gonna have an elevation impact as far as just looking at the water runoff and things of that sort that could affect your the decision making at that point in time.
Great. Any more discussion on the 2017 LIDAR project? Any new business anyone would like to bring to the table?
Do we want to talk about Save at Home maybe another meeting or? Because a lot of the people here want to...
Let's talk about it now while it's fresh in our mind. do you want to...
Go ahead.
Do you want to lead, Terry?
You can if you want to. I did it last night. You can do it today.
You do a much better job at it. There's been safe at home legislation that's been passed. And what it is it's a address confidentiality law. And it allows someone that feels that they're in fear of their life to keep their address confidential within county records. And it's got big implications for us here in terms of land records, because addresses are a very important component of land records. It's going to require any participants to have a card that is issued by the Department of Justice, and they will have to show that card when they purchase property or otherwise want to make their address confidential if they already have property within Kenosha County. That card will very likely be first displayed in our Register of Deeds office, and our Kenosha or our CALM committee is working on a series of guidelines for what we will do when a participant comes to the county and wants that address.
Our concern with this is that if you're a normal person, not a person who does one of our jobs, and for example, you think to yourself, okay, I'm buying this house, I'm gonna have a tax bill, tax bills are on the county website, I need to serve the county treasurer with this note that says that my address has to be kept confidential. When technically the tax bill is the concern of the municipal treasurer, we just happen to use the website and put it out there because our municipalities don't have that ability. So technically they should serve both myself and the municipal treasurer, but we don't think normal people would know that, or the fact that Scott's office actually does the information that my tax bills come off of. Normal people wouldn't know that. So we wanted to try to come up with a procedure to make it reasonable, not overly difficult for us or municipalities, and just a process to file so that everybody kind of knows the flow and we don't even accidentally put someone in danger by not taking an extra step. So that's what we've kind of been working with. Last night we had a meeting with the municipal clerk treasurers to kind of, and we kind of talked over the law since it is new, and most of them had no idea what it was or how it might affect them. I honestly think this is going to affect municipalities even stronger than it's going to affect us. We have it from land record standpoints, but they also have voter registration to think about, utility billing to think about, dog licenses, all these things. They're more likely to get one than I think we are. There are, I believe, right now 130, 140 participants, adult participants in the state. And then about that same amount of children participants as well. Because when you enter, it's everyone in your household that enters the program. So we have participants in the county. We do not have any participants that own property. So that's where our land records haven't been affected. And so we were trying to think up ways to be reasonable and still be safe for people, and coming up with standards and ways to share information between departments and with the municipalities without further endangering something. So
why don't you send them to Horace and let him go pick up the guys?
Yeah. If only they all felt like that. Wouldn't that be lovely, Horace?
Yeah, it would.
And well, one of our concerns that Scott spoke to last night at our meeting was just this. We came up with a process by which on the websites and in our GCS and our land record system that we're going to have the mailing address will be the Department of Justice per the statute. But we didn't want to just completely blank out the property address, which is a required field in our system. So we determined that the property address will be the municipal building of whatever municipality it's in, because that would be readily noticeable to us and all of the municipalities that might wait, that's not their address, that's my address, that kind of a thing. But also if somebody got like some bulk data dump, it wouldn't be apparent that that one's missing an address. What's special about that one? They'd just be like, oh, okay, whatever. It would be in there and we wouldn't have disclosed anything that we're not supposed to disclose, and it would be all right. So that was kind of our leveling out of the playing field, was to try to do that. Also, we're creating WAMS notes in our system so that when somebody in my office gets a phone call on a property, it comes up saying it's a safe at home participant, refer them to the Department of Justice, and we tell them to go talk to the Department of Justice if they want more information. So we've kind of come up with that internally. We think it'll normally start with Joe. We think that normally it's going to be people who are recently buying it, because the person who's stalking them or they're in fear for their safety from can't know where they live currently. So if it's a piece of property they've had for a while, that person probably knows where that property is located. So we think it's going to be new purchases of property or inherited purchases of property. So we think they'll probably enter through Joe's office first. But either way, whoever gets the first notice is going to send it out to our entire group. We're trying to define, for example, Horace, if you think the sheriff's department would want to be in on that, or circuit court or human services or any of those people, or the DA. So we're trying to determine outside of our little land group who else we want. And Scott's been working on an email to send out to those various groups to see if they want to be in that email group that we have whenever somebody gets notified of one. And we didn't want to put in the body of the email, the person's information. So we're going to just have it be safe at home participant and have the attachment of a PDF of the scanned card that they gave us, because that's essentially all the information that we would get from that participant, but it wouldn't be able to be searchable by that person's name then.
But there is a problem with that. There's an inherent problem with it is that the name, they're not asking us to redact the name, they're asking us to redact the address. So if they came down to my office and, say they found the name or they found a parcel ID number, they could easily find the
Or if you know how to read a legal description.
Right, they could, anybody who has a little bit of savvy understanding of real estate records would be able to discover what the actual address
is. It's really
was.
Just the low-hanging fruit.
Redacting the address isn't going to give anybody a lot of safety unless they just have somebody that's completely out to lunch that's stalking them that doesn't understand these things.
So we're going to have to get a hold of Google to tell Google not to put them out there?
Well, that was one of the things.
Well, that's the problem.
That was one of the things we discussed in this discussion, is that the requirement seems rather soft in that they don't have to have like a court order or anything like that. They have to have a reasonable fear of their safety to apply for the program with the DOJ. But the thing is, the DOJ requirements are fairly strict. For example, you can't have Amazon if you want to be in this program. Why? Because Amazon, in that little agreement, when you sign up, can sell your address 9,000 times by tomorrow afternoon. So it's like things like that, unless you really had an issue, I don't think you're going to go through those kind of restrictions on your life. So it's kind of crazy that way. But
wasn't there some concern with the 911 system?
That's what I was getting to.
Everywhere?
So Scott had talked about where that point will be in the 911 system.
Right. And we have an address point on our GIS layers right now. Let's just assume that the owner of that address, of that property, becomes an applicant of this program. We have to remove the address everywhere so that it's not displayed out to the public. So we can keep it in our records in a private place where it's never served to the public or redistributed when people purchase data from it. And that's a very important aspect too. We've got to be very careful of that. So what we're going to do for 911 is we're going to maintain a separate data layer for any of those addresses that are for a participant, and we're going to have our primary address point layer here, which is going to have 99.9% of our addresses throughout the county. And just before we give data to 911 on a nightly basis, we're going to merge those two data sets, send it out to Joint Services. They've got the full picture with that particular address, so if there is an emergency at that,
they can still go to that person's
place.
House.
They can still be dispatched.
So it'll be on through MDC then, because if you're talking over the air, you're going to hear that person's name and address.
Well,
the signal's not scrambled.
Right.
Here's where it comes, and the DOJ website is pretty good, and I can send out the presentation that Joe and I got at our conference, and then the link to the website on it. If the information is required by law for you to do your job, you can use it as part of your job. So that's where things like, but you can't provide it out publicly. So that's where Corp Counsel is going to have to get in on whether or not that's publicly or use of your job. That's going to be a DOJ question, my friend.
It's going to be a nightmare because people listen to scanners all the time.
All the time.
Right.
They have them in their houses.
Yeah.
So I'll send it out to the whole group, the information and the contact we had at DOJ. She is great with those questions. And they've actually done two cleanup bills already since this past last April. And one of which made it an actual crime to divulge this information. So she has been a great resource, and John Moyer at Corp Counsel has gone back and forth with her a lot for our information, and he may be a good contact person to wade some stuff that way too. But I can send it out to the whole group so everybody has the information out. So, but yeah, there we have the same thing, Horace. There are so many things that in our stuff we're like, okay, they actually need to know where the property is located to do assessing. Yes, but we have to keep it off the public roll. Yes. But they don't have to list the address on the assessment roll. They only have to list the parcel number. Okay. So, yeah, it becomes... Like I said, there, I think there are lots of holes in it, like Joe said, but it, there is a carve-out for things that are required to do your statutory duties, so.
And nobody wants to be in a position of missing something that, you know, could have possibly protected somebody that's in a precarious situation, so we just want to be sure that we turn over every stone.
I wanted to make sure it wasn't on a screen in our office so that if somebody called, because I like that our website, the reason our website does not allow people to search by names is exactly this case. Right. This is why we have the policy in place. We don't want people going after judges or cops or whatever.
They can do that in my office. They can come into my office and search by name.
But they can come in or they could call. You know, and they could just call up and be like, oh, yeah, I work up at the Milwaukee, blah, 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 blah. I'm looking for information on X, Y, for the DMV. Because we get those phone calls legit from the DMV all the time. And I didn't want my staff to be put in the position they could accidentally disclose something over the phone while just trying to be helpful to the public. So that's why we came up with this kind of system. So,
any more discussion on Safe at Home? Any other new business?
Just, it's probably not new business, but I think at the end of the last meeting, I think Andy did a good job of kind of stirring the pot as far as what the purpose of the Calm Group actually was, and I think Scott volunteered to...
Volunteered.
head up a group of Calm members to take a look at this, and I think there's been a couple of meetings and there's been some progress. So is there any update that, on this?
Any update? The Calm Group goes back to the early to mid-90s, and it Calm is an acronym for Kenosha Area Land Management, and it was a group that got together to discuss common issues in terms of land records management here within the county. That group consists of myself and Land Information, Joellen is Register of Deeds, Terry, Mary Kubicki, Andy, and then IT members, numerous IT members. And we meet on what is now a quarterly basis to discuss land records issues. That group has been tasked in the past with updating our land records modernization plan, and specking out, along with IT, a lot of what is needed in our systems as far as maintaining land records here at the county. So that group is very, they do a lot of the groundwork for what this particular committee I see it, approves or disapproves. And you'll hear us talk about Calm quite a bit here at this particular land council, and I would personally view it as an advisory committee of to this council.
Kind of a work group that kind of does the day-to-day stuff. Since we only meet once, twice a year, it's kind of the stuff that does the stuff leading up to the meetings and those kind of day-to-day things that crop up as, you know, everything evolves in technology and statute changes and all those things between our offices for in-between things.
So I think that part of the discussion was the Calm meetings really morphed into a review of IT projects and tickets and those type of things.
I kind of digressed into that.
Right.
And wanted to bring it back to its original.
Right. So you're reborn again as looking at land information needs, requirements, getting ideas from other counties and things that we should be taking into perspective. And
because we still thought it was useful that we did roundtable discussions of what the major projects that were coming up in each of our departments that might affect the others at the table, or might affect the fact that IT has to work on his stuff first, or things like that. And that's how we devolved into tickets, I think. But also, Scott's been doing a really great job of planning a topic for each meeting that we need to cover. So the last one we did, we hammered out the safe at home, the last couple. And another one we're kind of looking at, we're going to look at the delinquent tax manager app. And, you know, those various things that we want to hammer out and go through as a committee and look at stuff. So,
And because that committee is tasked with drafting the plan, if there are ideas for future years in terms of projects to utilize these monies for, by all means, get in touch with any one of the members on that COM committee so that we can get that inserted into our plan, and we'll be able to make a quicker determination if it's a proper project for land records going forward.
That way it'll be less messy than if we throw one on the floor at our meeting when we need to approve it here.
And that brings up our next meeting in November is going to be a very important one. There will be two major issues that this committee will have to act on at that time. And we've covered them already, essentially, but I just want to remind you, the land information plan will have to be approved by this committee at this time. Won't have to be approved, but will have to be voted on, mm-hmm. excuse me. Additionally, this committee will have to vote on a potential project or projects for our 2019 grant funds for next year. Tentatively, right now, that is set to between $40,000 and $50,000, again, based on what the state is telling us. I would guess it's probably going to be $50,000. But we will have to come up with project ideas by November so that we can get that grant application in by December 31st. So if anyone has any ideas, by all means, share it with anyone on the COM team, or hopefully we'll come up with some good projects for 2019 and beyond.
Okay. Very good. I see that I'm a half hour late and you change the format. You kind of show me up, a multimedia PowerPoint deck.
It looks a lot like the one he did last night. No, I'm
just I thought it was very good. It was very helpful for me to follow along with some of the stuff. So well done. Any other business? Have a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Who got in second?
I don't know.
Joe or Andy?
Either way.
Yeah. I'll arm wrestle you.